Welcome to Indie Game Business, where you'll learn to navigate the industry with ease. This show is produced by the Powell Group, the leading business consulting firm in the gaming industry. Visit us online at indiegame.business to learn about our online digital events. We have some amazing sessions with people in the gaming industry, and you can participate for free and purchase inexpensive passes to our industry-leading business-to-business system. Now, here we go, Indie Game Business. We made it. We made it. We got Minaz, and I don't want to cut into any more of his time, so I will just bow out here. Minaz, he's a co-founder of Battery Low and Sleepy Penguin. Fundraising hacks for your indie game business.
Well, thank you, and lovely to see you people. I guess we're late, but actually, most of the times, the funny thing about money is people always say that it never arrives when you actually need it. It arrives eventually, but most of the time it arrives when you, like, probably a bit later than when you actually needed it. But anyways, you do need money to make games, and you do need to talk about it. So today's session is definitely about fundraising. It's all about fundraising, to be honest. And it's about the hacks that, well, I have experienced and myself, and also I have seen other people experience around me or people I know. So yeah, who am I? So as your host said here, so I'm the co-founder of Battery Interactive, and also we have another studio focused on our own IP, which is called Sleepy Penguin Studios. Battery Interactive is basically a service company. So we offer services, different kind of services in game development and software development, but Sleepy Penguin is solely focused on their own IP of making games. And also I do have a book, it's on Amazon, it's called literally How to Make a Game. So yeah, if you are a beginner level developer and want to advance to the intermediate level, I guess, so it's for you. So yeah, I told you about Battery Interactive. So we started back in 2015 in Bangladesh, and the past 9 years we have been here and working across the globe from Bangladesh. And Sleepy Penguin Studios, as I said, is our own indie game dev studio, which focuses on making strategy games. All right. So in this part, so there's a video. I hope you guys can see it. I'm just going to mute the sound. So this is a trailer video of a game. It's called Paratopic. And it's definitely an indie game, as you can guess. And the graphics is, as you can see, it's a PS1 style graphic. And the guy who was behind this game, it was a very small team project, definitely. But the guy who was behind it had probably seen the worst side of the coin while making it. So he got financial trouble. He got into financial trouble, which many of us usually do while making games. And he got into health trouble, and it was a chronic disease. And he also got trouble with his health insurance and all of the things. So his life was made into a nightmare while he was building this game. And eventually it paid off. Fortunately, it paid off. But he actually has seen it all while making this game. And this game actually has won awards as well. And it's a little $5 experience, and which was very good, and you can still try it. But the guy who was behind it, so he had to go through a lot while making it. So, and when we say that, here's some stats for you. So, as you know, like we all, like in Sleepy Penguin as well, we are focusing on releasing our game in Steam primarily. So a median indie game now makes like less than $4,000 on Steam. So, excuse me. So that's probably not a stat that is you'll see in your investor pitch decks. So, but yeah, probably in this session. because we are going to talk about the truths, all of it today. And before you ask about the darkness alongside me, it's not about the ambience that I'm trying to create while making this session. It's about a sudden power cut, which the reason is unknown to me, probably something with the building's electricity circuit or something like that. We've had one of these issues in the recent past. So more depressing stats for you. So only 3% of the indie developers make more than $1 million in like the current scenario. So so it's these are not like very inspiring stats, right? So I'm not saying that we should not make indie game. I make indie game myself. I'm a part of like a big team, a small team with big hearts who make indie games. So yeah, but we know what we are signing up for. That's what I'm trying to tell you. So it's not easy and all of us know it, but it's just a lot of work. And sometimes it's very challenging. And it's always better if you know these things before you jump into it or before you jump into action. Because if you know that something is coming in your way, so you can be a bit more prepared than if it hits you by surprise. So yeah, you know what I'm talking about. But every cloud has a silver lining. That's what they say, right? So even though it's the most challenging, one of the most challenging stuff in life, in our world, as you can see, indie games now make up like about 40% of all units sold on Steam. Yes, you can use that slide on your investor pitch deck or probably in your publisher pitch deck. So yeah, I mean, the publishers know it, but probably your investors might want to know these things. So these are like definitely good numbers that can help you like feel optimistic about it. At the same time, like you have to know what these numbers mean for you, right? So as you can see in this particular slide, so you have to you can categorize yourself in one of these probably five or six categories in here. So you can be a learner, which earns like more than 1K for his games. And definitely, as you can guess, most of the developers fall into that bracket. But there are definitely some success stories which earn more than $1 million while making indie games. Probably the number is probably the like tiniest 2%, as I said. But still, if you combine it all, so together we are stronger, right? So it's still like 40% of all units sold on Steam. So it's not a small thing. The community, the world of indie game developers, the community and the world that we live in is not small. So we are a big unit altogether. And with proper hacks and proper approaches, you can mitigate many of the risks, if not most, to be in that 3% or even like in the full-timer bracket, like 7%. So that probably could be your target, maybe. Anyway, so the idea is, of course, enough of the depressing talks. We're going to talk about the realities and also the dreams right now. So yeah, keep trying, keep at it, like keep making your games. And while you do that, and before you do that, so let's talk about one of the most difficult hurdles for indie teams, that is the funding and also the jumping off Mario, right? And although I said no more depressing stuff, but you should know that about 70% indie games don't make it due to the lack of funds. Now, when I say that lack of funds, it means two things. One is the failure to accumulate the fund that necessary, of course. I mean, that's dumb, right? That is what I meant. No, there's something else to it. That is not the only thing that I meant. Yes, most of the times it's just the lack of funds, but also there's a hidden fact is most of the time we misjudge what amount of funds we need to make a game. So let's say you need $50,000 to roll the first version, beta version of your game. And if you miscalculate it, if you have a like big margin of error in your judgment, in your calculation, in your estimation, so probably you might end up making 20% of what you wanted to make and burning out all the money. And trust me, that is the most common scenario everywhere. So estimation is important. And when you have game over in most of the games, apart from roguelikes, so you can have your save games, of course, and you can start in video games, right? But the problem with many of the indie game studios is, like, if you hit a wall, many of the studios don't usually come back from it. And I know a lot of individuals who have been in this business of making games, making indie games, and who has hit many walls, and or probably a wall, but they hit it so hard that they cannot get back up from it. So they end up either quitting the game industry, or, like, you know, most of the times they quit the game industry and just, you know, shift to something that they are not passionate about. Or, like, sometimes they are lucky enough to try again, you know, just have another go. So know what category you fall into, right? So that is, like, know thyself. That is the first thing that I should tell you, maybe. So if you are done with self-evaluating, then it's time probably to look into, like, the sources, like, know others, you know, where can you get your funding? So first of all, always we have to start with bootstrapping. Everybody probably starts with bootstrapping. I opened, like, we co-founded Bachelor Interactive with only, like, $25. Like, that was our initial investment. So it started with that, but it doesn't mean it will end with that. So, but you have to scrap, like, whatever you have, and you can start with scraping stuff, definitely. But that's not the end of the world, and you should scale. But you have to invest. One thing I tell all the people, not only in the game industry, but also in other industries, is that if you want to own something, if you want to make something for yourself, of yourself, so you should first invest in it yourself. Even if it's $1, invest what you can, whatever the amount it is. Because if you do not invest in something that you believe in, you are telling people that you are believing in, then it really doesn't make sense for somebody else to come in and invest in that. Yes, probably they will invest 100 times, probably 1,000 times more than you. But still, if you invest zero, 1,000 times zero is zero. So yeah, invest, first of all. And so, as I was saying, so it has a lot to do with motivation as well. When you are spending your own money, so the motivation goes, like, it skyrockets. So whatever the amount it is, just invest, of course. Get started. Do not wait for an angel investor to show up or your friends and family to show up before, like, you put in your own money. So whether it's $25 or $250 or $2,500, or to $50 million, just, you know, start investing. And also, like, then comes, like, when you are leading from the front, you are steering the ship. Like, think of yourself as the Jack, as, you know, Jack Sparrow, or probably not the best example, probably, like, sailing the ship in Assassin's Creed 4, maybe. So Black Flag. So think of yourself as the captain of the ship. And if you want to have the complete confidence of other people to join your crew, so you need to set the example by leading from the front, right? So jumpstart the process by yourself, and then you can talk about other people and other resources. So when we are talking about other resources, then comes the point of game investors. See, all these slides were not about getting investors in the first phase, right? This was about setting the mindset right. So as soon as you get your mindset right, then you get a solid base. Then this part that we are going to cover right now is going to get a lot easier. That is important, to set your base right. So if your base is weak, then you are going to fail, my friend, in this segment. So game investor hunting is almost like treasure hunt. So there are a few steps I'm just trying to narrow down for you. First of all, there's a lot of background work involved, like it or not. You have to decide what type of investor you're looking for. Type of investor we're going to cover right away, or probably a bit later. And then you have to see, like, when you have your, like, after this step is done, like you have decided what sort of investor you're looking for, then you have a list of probable investors, and then you have to judge, you have to see, you have to research what are the previous investment patterns of these guys, right? And then number three is watching out for the red flags. So in these investment patterns, what were the incidents that he had? What were the relationships he made? Is he still connected with the investees? I mean, the people he has invested on, and what are the relationships? How did these companies do? Of course, I'm not asking if they were profitable or not. I'm asking how did they fare with that money? Were they able to run smoothly? Were there conflicts, and how big were they, and how did they resolve them? Probably not all the information so will be available to you, but learn as much as you can and look for the red flags. I'll talk about the red flags also, like in my session. So, and like when we're talking about like type of funding and type of investors, as you all know, there are multiple avenues that you can pursue all these things. So first of all, like angel investors, game publishers, they're always there. Venture capital, a very interesting avenue for you, and also different grants. And which one is suited for your game and your studio will be entirely different than like probably with mine, or maybe it will be the same. I don't know. It will vary. It can vary. That's all I'm saying. So you can start with connecting with people in the industry, talk about them, like talk about your ideas, and try to make an original impression. So it doesn't have to be a one-sided impression, but try to be original. I have always found it better to be original in my life, like whenever I'm doing these kind of things. And trust me, people love original stuff, original stories. And in the game industry, especially, people love origin stories. So be positive, be original. And also, if you be original, then you like increase your probability of like meeting people who shares kind of similar visions with you, and who can be probably your friends in the journey, your crewmates, right? So start with talking, start with just reaching out. And how you can reach out to them, just, you know, first of all, you can use primary connections, like people you know directly. You can ask your primary connections to make acquaintances, make introductions, make inroads for you with secondary connections. You know, people you may know, people who like fall in the bracket of people you may know. And then there's, of course, game conferences and events. I'm a big, big fan of them. And like, even this is a game event, right? I'm talking to you. And this is my second time speaking in IBS sessions. And I absolutely love the community in here. Absolute privilege to be here. Thank you, Jay and others. And yeah, of course, social media, right? So yeah. Talk to people. Don't just keep your idea to yourself. Like we are well past the age of like thinking about protecting your ideas and whatnot. Nowadays, everybody has brilliant ideas. That's the good thing about it. So yeah. And if you have pitch decks and game demos, like whatever progress you have done with the game. So yeah, just get them out there. And when you're talking to people, you can freely just show it to them and do not feel hesitated about them. Just talk to them. You can say, hey, I have just made the first iteration, or it's not even like pre-beta session. It's not even a pre-beta version, but would you love to test it? I have done the mechanics like of movement, and I think it's really cool. But the rest of the world is like, it's not done yet. If somebody says that he's interested, genuinely interested to see this, then let them try it out. I mean, there's no harm, right? He's not going to judge you based on the progress you have made in the last 1 month, 2 months, or 6 months. I mean, those questions come up later. But what I'm trying to say is be original. If you're excited about your game, which you should be if you're in this business, do not hide it. Do not hide it. Just show everything. So when you're pitching, that is a very crucial element. And also, you have to study your audience. So one thing that I've have personally had success about when I was pitching my game to people who might be interested to partner up with us. So like I did try to know them before I pitched properly. I tried to know which games they play, which things they love. And I honestly found many similarities. And when you know that you have some common elements to discuss, then the conversation turns into a gossip or just a friendly fireside chat, maybe, or maybe just a friendly gossip, you know. So it turns into a conversation. It's not a pitch anymore. And if you can turn it to a conversation, then your odds will skyrocket. Trust me. And you have to be very focused about it. Like, what are the things you are highlighting? You don't need to have five strengths. Nobody has five strengths. No indie studio has five strengths. You should have probably one or maybe two max. And you should focus on that when you're pitching. And be very specific on what you are expecting from a potential partner. Because otherwise, well, otherwise it's, you should not leave them stranded in Fantasy Island where they're just guessing what you want to say. And whether you are a one-man people or a team, just, you know, show your strength with your past professional experience. So many of you ask that, okay, I have not released any game myself before, but I have worked on separate titles, or I have worked on a few projects that went live. So just focus on those things. Focus on your original strengths. You do not need to fabricate items or borrow items from somebody else. You should not do that. So if you have a team, you can frankly, you know, just be transparent about it. Just tell the potential partner that you're pitching that, hey, I have five people in my team. Two of them came from this company, or they had these indie studio and they made this, they did that. And now we are here because just tell the original story. And showcase your strength from your past professional experience. And it gives an immense boost to your pitch. And I cannot stretch this, the importance of this, like any further. Like, you have to have a solid budget and schedule as well. Like, it really helps. I mean, to some of the investors at least. It's not about the judgment. I mean, they will not go into a debate with you regarding how much should you spend on month three when they're not even like in your cap table anymore yet. But if you have these things, that will mean that you have thought about these things. That will mean that you are a guy who loves to be ready in the face of a cyclone, in the face of a tornado. And trust me, many of the investors, they just want this thing that you want to be like, they want somebody who can get ready when they have like, you know, apocalypse, just like I'm having on right now, a power cut. So, and when you're putting in these numbers, in any off chance, probably they will not look into these numbers, but in any off chance that they just skim through those things, they can ask about probably one or two numbers just out of curiosity. So, it will be good if you can give them a solid answer. The funny thing about this thing is people, the investors or somebody that you're pitching to, they don't usually like go through the whole thing, like when you're pitching, but they just listen to it just so that they can ask you a question and they want to see what your answer is. And from your answer, they judge. So be ready with your answers. That's what I'm saying. So, and also, like, you have to have provision for things going wrong. What if they say this? What if they say that? You have to know your own strength and weakness in your pitch. So do your homework. Do it well. And this is important. And yes, it may feel like if sometimes it just happens that you connect very well with an investor or somebody you are pitching to. But what happens is, like, sometimes it's just some things go wrong, right? And sometimes they just say that, okay, we're clicking and yes, I'll be part of it. But eventually some things go wrong. So you have to be ready for those things. So we'll talk about these things in more detail in a bit. But before that, just one thing that probably I missed, that when we are researching about investors, what are the traits that you should look for? So that's just funny that we have Batman pictures in here. So as you can see, oh, that would be my cat. Sorry about that. It's all happening tonight. So when you're looking for your own Batman, where's money? So the first level should consist of three things: passion, trust, and risk-taking mentality. So even like you have to have at least like probably three of them actually, like in an ideal investor in level one, because if he's not passionate about it, eventually you're going to have a problem. If he doesn't trust you, or if you do not trust him, then that will be another problem. And if he's not a risk, if he's in safe businesses only, if his investments are only in safe businesses, well, then, I mean, only 3% of us make it to the top. It's not something that a safe businessman prefers, because he will not like the odds. He will invest in just, you know, he'll prefer investing in bonds that will give him like much more odds, right? So sometimes you can be a bit confused about like, this guy's very passionate or he trusts me.
Sign up today for the Indie Game Business Newsletter. It's a weekly source of business news curated for indie dev teams. We've got discounts on all Indie Game Business events and events from all of our partners. You get a first look at the summaries and takeaways from all of our podcasts. There's exclusive opportunities for promotions and early access to new tools for development, monetization, and more. Check it out. Sign up. PowellGroupConsulting.com/publisher-list.
So it doesn't matter if he's not a risk taker. My friend, it will matter. It will matter when you are in the middle of your development and he's just thinking, okay, so many money wasted and probably I'm not feeling for it anymore. Then you'll feel it. So yeah, judge these things first. And if he doesn't have passion for game development, well, that's a big flag. And I don't think you should go with anybody who has trust issues, or if he has trust issues, or you if you have trust issues with them, like vice versa. So if you get like all these things done in level one, then it's time to level up. So what are the other things? So if you have like five candidates, let's say, ready to invest in you, so how do you judge? So one thing that I always like, this filter that probably works, is like if somebody who has already invested in game industry, that's really preferable, and who can probably, or who can, you know, and or add value in more than one dimensions, probably he knows people in circles who can give you good resources, probably you have like, probably he can help you reach out to publishers or different marketing channels or medias, whatever. So those things. And also somebody who has industry knowledge, that's a big plus if you can have. So those things are in the secondary level. So if you can get past this level one, then you can level up in this segment. Anyway, speaking about red flags, I have talked about this a lot, red flags, but I never actually described like what are the specific things that I was talking about. Well, I think I have already covered a fair bit of that in the other slides, but just noting these all down. So first of all, like about somebody who is not a risk taker and also who plays safe. Somebody who likes to watch his money. This is very important. Trust me, you don't want to get in bed with this guy, like operationally, like in business. Because if he doesn't understand the game industry and still wants to watch his money, then you're going to spend your entire, like probably 20% of your week just explaining it to him that why do you need to pay this artist this amount, or why do you need this particular artist in your team? And he will not understand it. Then you have to spend a few more hours explaining it to him. Otherwise, he will not probably sign the next paycheck. You have to validate, right? So just save yourself from all those things. Do not take money from these guys. And also like some people who do not have any opinions of their own, they are also red flags. because they will offer you no constructive criticism absolutely whatsoever. And when you're having an investor or having a partner who is financially backing you and helping you out with other things, so you should expect, you can have your expectation about having some constructive criticism, because at the end of the day, he is your partner as well. So yeah, it's a big plus to have them. And if somebody who doesn't have any of those things, well, these are red flags. So yeah, one thing that I cannot stretch enough, that you should not look for investors who only approve of sure shots. They should invest in bonds again, or gold maybe, or land, not in indie game business. And also, one another thing which is very important is, do not set your hopes high on verbal commitment. So there might always be verbal commitments. Hey, I like your idea so much. I'm in love with the concept. I want to see this game in the making. I want to play it. So yeah, we'll do it. You have my commitment. That's very good. That's like a fairy tale, of course. But why don't we get the paperwork done then? It's important. Paperwork is important. Do not just do everything on verbal commitment. Just get those term sheets ready. These are boring stuff, I know. If you don't want to do it yourself, then fine, just get somebody else to do it. Like, it's sometimes like, with proper research, you can find affordable options, definitely. Or just give it to like somebody else who is like your partner or team member. Just get it done. I mean, these things are important, trust me. And another thing is, like, this goes beyond saying, communication. Be communicative, keep people in the loop, like, don't ghost your investors, never. Like, be communicative with stuff. Be upfront about the problems you are facing, the problems you might face in the future. Keep your documents updated, like, not only for your investors or your backers, but also yourself as well, so that you can validate what your initial plan was, whether things are going according to plan, or whether the plan has vanished. So yeah. And also check your milestones on regular intervals, like, probably not daily, but like, you know, set some milestones in regular intervals. Create a routine and be truthful to your partners and transparent. So enough about like angel investors and other investors. So let's talk about something else a bit, like some other sources like crowdfunding. So crowdfunding is definitely like one of the options that you can try, and many of the indie game developers like try out these options. So this definitely start with the private circle. So one of the like category of people is basically like who will help you out, but like will not be disappointed with the truth. So that's one category. And like another thing is like when you're raising for the private circle, like your friends and family, so they will probably not be the industry experts. So they will probably, oh, the power is back. Good grief. Almost when my talk time is almost over. Anyways, another thing is like, they will not probably be super experts on your business, but they will wanna know what's happening. So they may rely on other people's opinions on trends, or like trends that they can study. But what they can do is they can give you initial feedback, and if they're honest with you, so like that would be like the big plus. So you tell them when you're taking money from them, do you just tell them, hey, look, be honest and transparent with me. I am being honest with you. And if you, sometimes we think that if we say these things, people are not gonna invest money on us. People are not gonna fund me. But it's actually the opposite. If you are being transparent, if you are showing both sides of the coin, then you get real people who will not give you trouble after they give you money. And that is really probably more important than raising funds. That's what I can tell you from experience. And also crowdfunding worldwide is definitely another option. Like if you are done with your private circle, and if it's not enough, or if you want to raise more, but like it's know your position, of course. That's what I should say here. Like worldwide, there's so many options. So many gamers and so many game enthusiasts out there who want to fund games. And if you if your concept is not, you know, that much compelling or easy to access, probably you will find it very hard to like convince people to donate or convince the crowd to donate. However, like you should be aware of the other things that might happen. When I say that share your ideas, I mean that you should share your ideas wholeheartedly, but once in a lifetime, sometime it might happen that some people can have a groundbreaking idea, one in a million maybe. So you do know that like these concepts are like global properties, as I can say, as I love to like name the term. So there are different Reddit subreddits where you can find like game ideas that you're like, you can probably borrow it from there, like legally they are to be borrowed, right? So like there are places and people talk about these things, and when you're making games or designing games, it's usually a hybrid. So but if you're super, you know, clingy about your idea, maybe then maybe crowdfunding is not the best option. So yeah, and VC money is of course another option, but probably not the early stage people. But yeah, definitely, like if you are, if you have crossed a few milestones and if you are, you know, up there right now, then definitely you are there. But you know your position and then aim for the VC funds, definitely, because once you get the VC funds, then you like level up and there's hardly going back from there. And there will be much more monitoring and much of those administrative stuff that will be in place, and somebody or some people have to take care of those things. So the more organized your funding party is, like the VC, they are the most organized definitely. So they'll give you more trouble for it. Anyways, so there are different grants, like you can find more grants, like I just listed a few grants that are like very popular, of course. So you can like reach out to these. Maybe they're very famous, and like other grants, local grants, global grants, they're always good, right? But they take a good amount of time applying and getting. Now, since we have talked enough about funding sources and how to get funding, let's move our topic a bit into fund management. This is necessary, I believe. So first of all, your initial team, your core team, should be very small. Very small means just the people that you really, really need. Ask yourself once, twice, thrice, do I really need another guy? And you have to answer it yourself three times minimum to convince yourself first that, yes, I really need another guy to do this. But just try to get it done with the guys who are already there, perhaps, because in the early days, it's really important to keep a lean team until you have hit your jackpot or until you have reached a certain stage. Because most of the time, we go through so many iterations, then you have to remake certain stuff so many times. Sometimes the game just literally changes like upside down. So the team has to adapt as well. And these money, when you have people, you have to pay them, right? So this money will be spent already. So if you have higher burn rate, it will be a problem. So even if you secure more than what you needed, do not spend it all. Try to be very calculative in your human expenditure. I'm not saying you to pay people less. I'm asking you to have people, only people that you need in the early stages. But do not pay them less. That will hurt their motivation. Invest more on long-term assets. This goes beyond saying, of course. Long-term assets means not only people, but also other things, of course, like licenses and those things. And also, as I was saying, minimum budget distribution. And keep provision for changes. There will be a lot of changes, trust me. Your game concepts will change. Sometimes the entire game will change. You'll be pursuing an entire different game after working 6 months on a certain game. So think about those things when you plan. Think about the fund management. It will not be an 18 months project with fixed amount of burn rate for 18 months with one increment after a year. Trust me, the team will change. The ideas will change. the game will change. So keep provisions for those changes in your budget and in your plan. And also another thing I must say is, like, it's okay to let go. Sometimes some people become toxic. Some people that you get really attached to, but they become detrimental to your studio maybe for some reason. So we get really upset about letting them go. But your studio should move on. The show must go on, as Queen said. So it's okay to let go sometimes. So think about that. Like, value your money. And also look out for some blind spots. That is really important. For example, the logistics. Your internet speed is really important. Really, really important. And also your devices and those things. So probably it's not very important to get a, like, mechanical keyboard for your developer, maybe, unless he absolutely digs it, maybe. Otherwise, he cannot work on other keyboards, maybe. But it's important to get him the latest graphics card, maybe. Think about those things. And also, although I said it's okay to let go, but also you should also focus on, you should also keep in mind to retain the key person. I mean, when at the same time, I'm talking about two things, right? So do not get confused here. What I'm trying to say is, sometimes there are some persons who make the backbone of your company, of your team. At any case, do not lose them. Try to keep them. Do your best. And also try to be very clinical with your project management. Otherwise, it might hurt you, like, in ways that probably you cannot imagine right now. So these are the typical blind spots you should look out for when you're managing your funds and planning for it. So keep in mind, like, probably the 90% of us will sign up for failures because we'll be earning less than 100K. But still, if you have that expectation and validation management, then it's good. Like, if your game sucks, pardon my French, then you should be the first one to tell wholeheartedly, hey, man, to your friend, to your guy who is working beside you in the studio, I think this is not working. You should rather have him saying this to you or you saying this to him rather than some people in Steam review bombarding your game with 1-star or 2-star reviews saying the thing that you are saying right now. So have your expectation and validation management on point. That will save you. That will give you 3 more chances, 5 more chances, 10 more chances to have a go at it. And sometimes probably that's all you need. I mean, Rovio, like, that happened for Rovio. I mean, 52 games, no success, and then Angry Birds, boom. So can happen to the best of us, I guess. So be a phoenix. And the end of the day, at the end of the day, make sure that you have what it takes to be a phoenix. You can bounce back from failures. Although we sign up for failures initially, but it's important that we can bounce back. You can make another game. You can make game again. Do not burn yourself in a way that this is your first and last, or this is your last endeavor into game industry. And I would hate to see another friend just leave the industry because it is hard, because it is a fire show. So be persistent. And if you're a persistent guy or girl or somebody else, then you'll see me, like, definitely in this, any of the items in here when we're talking about games.
This is good stuff. This is amazing stuff. And, you know, since that we had the tech issues, it's going to cut you a little bit short, but that's okay, because we have in our Discord, if you guys are not in our Discord, discord.gg/indiegamebusiness, there is something called post session chat and post session hangout. So if you want to hang out there, Mean has for a little bit afterwards, can you do that? All right. Well,
Definitely.
All right. That'll work great. Yeah. So check it out. Check out his email. Check out the Facebook, the LinkedIn. You guys should screenshot that. Or you can go into Discord in just a few minutes. But we're gonna bring up some questions, because we've got some here. We've got from Borislav Vesnik. This is from LinkedIn. of a studio is raising from a combo of sources consecutively in milestones, angels, grants, VCs, and working with publishers for a release, are there any red flags you see in this kind of model?
Well, no red flags per se, but one thing that you should keep in mind is like there is something that probably I didn't cover in the slides, that is the investor management. So that part is really important. So if you have like more than one investors and more than one source of funds, and trust me, nobody, like unless it's a like donation, like grants, even grants nowadays, they check for your progress and milestone, right? So that means you have more people to answer to. And if you do not answer to these guys, if you do not keep them informed on the milestones, and if you are not showing that you are on track or you are doing well, so there might be a problem in the future. So it's okay to raise from a bunch of people from different areas, but make sure that you have enough people talking to them in proper frequencies and answering their questions.
Awesome. Their hunger. Sam just asked for the screen back so he could screenshot it. So I'll put that up there. All right. The next question we have, is there any merit in showing past projects that may have been student or jam games that were particularly well-liked and polished, but maybe not straight up saying they were student or jam games? Jam games.
In my... I get it. So in my life, I have the pleasure of recruiting or like... And also like being in the recruitment process of so many people, like I've interviewed so many people in my life in the last 10 years. So, and trust me, like I've had such weird experiences. Like probably I was a judge of a game jam somewhere and I saw this really weird small game, but I really loved the concept. I basically looked that guy up and I said, hey, why did you make it? What is the story? And he told me his origin story. And then I said, okay, how much do you know about game dev? Do you want to like learn more about it? Do you want to join my company? You know, he said, hey, I'm just a student and I'm just, you know, doing my tuitions and whatever. I said, okay, but like if you're still up for it. And he's probably the senior developer in my company right now. So like these things, like when you were pitching, like if somebody like me or somebody else, like the typical guys, you know, not me probably who has like small money, but the guy with like big pockets, they usually love like origin stories. So if you have like a very good origin story behind it, and if you're really proud of that, I think you should not feel hesitant about it. And if some publishers are, you know, they are not interested in like looking into your game jam projects or your like student projects, then do not show it to them. I mean, you should cater to your listeners, like listeners. So if somebody does not like metal music, if you're an RJ, you should not probably play it. Or if you're a DJ in a party, so you should not probably play it in a group of people when you're a group of people they do not like metal music. So, but if they are in love with Highway to Hell, then why not?
That's good advice. All right, we got time for one more real quick. And then there's another one too, but like I said, go into the Discord. Here we go. How do you approach building a multi-year revenue forecast? That might be a big question, but... Do you want to answer that here? Because we literally have 1 minute. You want to answer that here? Or you want to answer that in the Discord?
Well, just real quick, like we can like discuss it further than Discord, but like just real quick, since it's the last one. So I think like the forecasting, like it doesn't, as I said in my like session, it doesn't have to be necessarily very accurate. Like nobody can predict the future like point by point. We are not fortune tellers. Nobody expects you to be. It's just your approach that you're talking about, that it's the approach that matters. So when you are approaching a figure, like you're making an Excel sheet, a Google sheet, so investors just, you know, the people, publishers, they only look for the approach. They mostly look for the approach that you're taking. Have you considered this? Have you considered that? Have you considered all the avenues that your game can make money from? So those things really. So, and just look into the similar games that have gone through the similar phases and what have they done, and ask yourself those questions, that can my game go through the same cycles? Can they do something more and have them in your plan? That's basically it, nothing else.
That's a good answer. There's more questions. Okay, so in the Discord, there is the post-session chat and the post-session hangout. If you want to go in there and do audio, video, you can go into the hangout, Minez. Thank you so much, Tripwire Presents, for sponsoring this. And also, if you see that thing scrolling across the bottom, we have Indie Game Business merch. So you can get some cool merch with this logo on it. It's at streamlabs.com /indiegamebusiness/merch. So do that. And thank you so much. And we've got Rachel Presser's coming up from Sonic Toad Studios. Always a good talk with her. Thank you so much, Minhas. And we'll see you over in Discord.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for listening to Indie Game Business. You can learn more about the show and our online business networking events at indiegame.business.